Take the 5 Daily Helpers online course to help you feel and cope better. Protecting yourself against the stresses and strains of daily life can be a challenge. Open Forwards helps you live life to the full by giving you the knowledge, the skills, and the support to make yourself calmer, healthier, and more confident. Find out how to sign up by moving on up to www.openforwards.com. Open Forwards helps you discover effective self-help, get some solid guidance that has a scientific basis, and save time by getting straightforward rundowns on the stuff that works. This is Self-Help SatNav. To episode number 11 of the Open Forwards podcast, Self-Help SatNav. This is a monthly show where we discuss relationships, mental health, work, parenting, well-being, and much, much more. So here we are, the start of a new year, 2017. And I've realised I've been doing this show since May last year. I set myself the manageable task of running a new show once a month, which I'm managing to do. It's been a workable schedule for me, and I've been reflecting on why I started this up. And it was to connect with more people. My mainstay, or bread and butter, has been individual psychotherapy for almost 10 years now. And whilst I love that work, it was also limiting me. I was only able to connect with a fixed number of people. And I only have so much time in the week alongside family time, seeing friends, and staying fit. I want to connect more people, and so I started this podcast. And in fact, it's gone far better than I'd expected. Today, I've had just short of 2,000 downloads. And for me, that is like, wow. I'd never expected that. And so, thank you. I want to thank you for downloading. I want to thank you for listening, and listening to repeat episodes as well. So please leave a rating and a review over on iTunes if you've liked the show. Just go to openforwards.com/iTunes. It will really help me continue my goal of adding a zero to that sum by the end of the year. So that's my target. I want to see if I can get 20,000 downloads by the end of 2017. And for that, I'll need an average of 1,500 downloads a month, I've worked out. So it's quite a tall challenge, but one I think I can make happen with your help. So you can do that by leaving a review and a rating, which gives it better coverage. People are more likely to find it. And also share with other people that you know. There are share buttons on the website, and also just kind of talking about it if it's something that you think other people will like. Okay, so let's move into today's episode, which is continuing the mini-series of Reinventing Your Life by Jeffrey Young and Janet Klosko. And we're going to be looking at another life trap today. We've looked at a few now in previous episodes, but today is all about emotional deprivation. And emotional deprivation is a life trap born out of the lack of something growing up. A lack of care, warmth, and connection. So let's just take a moment to imagine that. Imagine a child you know, maybe your own, a niece or a nephew, or someone other child that you know. And imagine their experience, imagine what that experience would be if they'd not been cared for enough, that they'd had no affection, no attention, they're often ignored, left alone, not supported. That they had little interest shown in how they felt, what was happening at their school, with their friends, or what they wanted to spend their time doing. And just picture that child. What are they feeling, thinking, doing? Feeling loneliness, hurt, sadness. Like no one cares, that they're not important, unlovable. Are they withdrawn, isolated, or keeping busy, or playing up just to get someone to pay attention to them? And now fast forward several years to when they become an adult. What do you imagine they're going to be like? Adults with this life trap of emotional deprivation struggle with loneliness as well. They tend to have low mood. They may blame others a lot as a way of trying to cope, complaining that others don't care enough, or trying to keep busy, doing lots for other people. It's probably quite common that people who don't expect to be cared for end up doing lots for other people without asking for much in return. Okay, so Young and Klosko break down emotional deprivation into three types. Number one, nurturance. Number two, empathy. And number three, protection. So what is nurturance? Well, I think it's emotional and physical nourishment. It's when people show affection and act with warmth and care. They hold you physically to give you a hug. They support you with their words and with their actions. They show kindness and compassion. Without that, you experience other people as cold. So naturally you stiffen. You learn to rely on yourself. And you remain disconnected from what other people can potentially offer you. That's the sad thing about it, I think. And empathy. What is empathy? Well, Brené Brown talks about empathy being a deep and authentic connection with someone. And in showing empathy, you have to connect with your own emotions and needs. You have to be willing to feel pain. Then and only then are you able to be with someone, listening, understanding, and being curious about their experiences. So I think you can start to understand why so many people fail to empathise well enough with their children. It takes courage. And if you've never had empathy modelled to you in a relationship, then you don't know how to do it. Okay, so that's number two, empathy. And number three, I said, was protection. Some children just lack basic protection because their parents are too aggressive, or they aren't there, or they're not strong enough to protect them from other people. And it's the job of the parent, of every parent, to protect and guide a child. I think few would disagree with that. It helps them to feel safe, to explore the world, and return to a secure base. Without a safe and secure attachment, you'll struggle in life and relationships. You'll probably end up searching for that perfect partner or friendship. And there's the possibility that you'll be regularly hurt and disappointed that other people don't care for you in the ways that you'd like. Okay, so I'm going to give you a few examples here. And thinking about emotion deprivation, I've met many people in the therapy room over the years who are struggling with this life trap. And whilst their experiences aren't unique, because in many ways all of us struggle with a lack of emotional care, I think parents just aren't capable of giving endless amounts of care. And this reminds me of my relationships with my children. Sometimes they just seem to want endless cuddles and attention. And whilst I'd really like to give that, I also recognise it's not possible. There are many things that their mother and I have to do, like clean the house, cook the dinner, tidy up, shopping, etc. I mean, the list of things we've got to do that people, parents have to do is infinite. So sometimes we have to say no, I can't. or you need to wait, or maybe just for a few minutes and then I need to get on with something. And it could be the same at night time. My youngest might wake up wanting cuddles. She's almost three. But if we do that, and part of me would really like to do that, she'll end up the next night and the next night again. And it quickly becomes unsustainable. So saying no is sometimes a necessary boundary that we have to put in place. I don't believe there's such a thing as a perfect parent or perfect development. Children have so many needs, and so do adults. And the best thing I can do as a dad is be good enough. To try to strike a balance between what they need, what I need, what my girlfriend needs. And it means we all have to make choices. And inevitably, it will lead to upset, anger, and sadness. I think we can't avoid that. But when we get it right, it will also lead to joy, laughter, connection, and love. So I think emotional deprivation as a life trap is about when parents make too many mistakes, rather than none at all. The parent either wasn't able or willing to take care of their child. And this leads to loneliness, hurt, and disconnection. One person I worked with some years ago comes to mind. She'd lost her husband a few years previous, but she also said that she hadn't been happy in that marriage. She described him as unavailable emotionally. She would often think of his needs, and she'd rarely tune into her own. And if she did, she felt guilty, which was too much to bear. She didn't know what to do with that guilt. So she kept herself busy, extremely busy, doing this, doing that, trying out new things, but not in a mindful way. It wasn't driven by a thirst for adventure, to learn or to experience life. Okay, well, it might have been a little, but mostly it was about the urge to stay busy and push away what she didn't want to feel, that was too painful to feel. So she'd practiced not having certain emotions like sadness and hurt. And this is what can happen for many people. There's nothing wrong with us when we're struggling like this. Although we get depressed and feel low, there's nothing that needs fixing in our brains. We don't need medication. In part because antidepressants don't cure anything. And there's no chemical imbalance in the brain, despite what drug companies and mainstream psychiatry would have you believe. Okay, so I want to move on a bit now into putting this within context and looking at some solutions. Young and Klosko talk about how this sits within a particular domain, the domain of rejection and disconnection. So it's all about relationships, isn't it? And that's one thing I like in this book, is that it takes a much more solid scientific approach. It explores what has happened to a person and how they've dealt with it. And when you ask those questions, when you start to understand, and you can begin to find more workable solutions. So the therapeutic approach in this book is something called schema therapy. And schema therapy brings together aspects of CBT, attachment psychotherapy, transactional analysis, and Gestalt. There may well be others in there. And all of these therapies have been shown to alleviate suffering. More importantly, though, I think, is that they address some key processes that have been shown to increase psychological flexibility. And this is a term, a concept, which brings together six processes on a spectrum. And if you score high on one or several of these processes, you're less likely to develop psychological problems, to be emotionally distressed. Or put more simply, you're more likely to find meaning in life and to connect with what gives you fulfillment, because that distress will be easier to manage. I'm not going to look at these processes in close detail now, because they're featured a lot in other podcast episodes and they continue to be featured. And this book doesn't refer to them so directly. So instead, what I've done is drawn out what I believe to be some of the key ways you can learn to connect with others to develop two-way loving relationships. They're based on some of the suggestions in the book, and I've developed them more in my own words through my own reflections to help you put them into practice in your own life. Okay, so number one, the number one way of dealing with these, this problem and developing two-way loving relationships is called awareness of emotional needs. So when a person is used to being alone, uncared for, and having no real guidance, they struggle to recognise their own emotional needs. They've got used to them not being met, and so much so they've forgotten what their own emotional needs are, or that they didn't have them met from the beginning. So the first step here is to become more aware of your own emotional needs by just getting more familiar with emotion words. So some of your basic everyday emotions are fear, sadness, anger, frustration, guilt, joy, and desire. And these words are just purely emotions. They're not behaviours. And I say that because many people I've met tend to say that they don't get angry that much. But often what they mean is that they don't act aggressively. But anger can be expressed in different ways. You might act aggressively, but alternatively you might bury it. You might use anxiety to mask it by obsessing about something else. Not intentionally, of course. Or you might be passive-aggressive through ignoring people, being sarcastic, or telling them you're disappointed in them, rather than hurt or angry. So in becoming more aware of your emotional needs, it makes sense to try to slow things down, to notice your emotions. You can do this by asking yourself at regular intervals throughout the day, what am I feeling right now? This is a better question than how am I feeling, as you tend to describe your thoughts when asked this. Oh, how you doing? You alright? Yeah, I'm okay. Not bad. Just been out to the shops, made some food. People tend to talk about what they're thinking or what they've been doing when asked how. So you can break that tendency by asking yourself what emotion am I feeling right now? And where am I experiencing that in my body? Okay, so that's number one, getting more aware of your own emotional needs. Number two, I'm suggesting, is to ask more people more often for support. Because when you don't ask for support or show that you need something, you give the impression that you're getting along just fine. The message you give is that you don't need anything, and so people tend not to give it. If you want some help, if you want to talk or you want some company, it's really important to begin asking for it. This may seem scary or strange, but that's just because you haven't done it much before. You'll get more used to it when you start doing it. You'll start to let others know that you're there. All of you, all 100% of you, arms, legs, head, and heart. People will notice your emotional experiences much more and start to tune into them. And you'll increase the chances that you'll build these two-way loving relationships that you're after. So that's number two, asking for support. Number three, I'm saying, is forming relationships with people who can care for you in return. Care for you in a way that's nurturing, warm, and protective. There's a good chance that if you've been stuck in these patterns for some time, you will have people in your life who aren't able to give you what you need. They might be cold, distant, not able to express affection, or show interest in your well-being. And if building new two-way relationships is really important to you, then you may have to think about making some tough decisions. Like, do you still want that person in your life? Moving forwards, it's going to work better if you can form relationships with people who can care for you. Just because you ask for support from those around you doesn't mean they'll give it. For whatever reason, maybe they can't or they don't know how. And it's up to you to see if you want to try and to decide how long you'll try for. If you've already been trying for some time, then ask yourself, have you really been upfront with them about asking for support? Is it possible that you could be more direct and more explicit? Are you willing to do so from now on? And how long will you wait to see if it comes back? If it's with a life partner, then you may be faced with some difficult decisions. Okay, so number three there is about forming relationships, investing in relationships with people who can care back, who can be nurturing, warm, and protective. Number four, the fourth way, is to observe the workability of your responses to other people's lack of care, warmth, and protection. So what I'm saying here is start to get more familiar with what you do. What you do when you feel as though a person doesn't care that much about you. What are the things you tend to do in those situations? For example, do you withdraw? Do you try to please them? Do you get aggressive with them, criticize them? Do you demand attention and care from them? Or have you gotten used to being alone, keeping people at arm's length? You will have learned to do various things to help you cope with the pain of this life trap. And there's a good chance that these things have become patterns, which might work in the short term to distance you from your pain, your sadness, or your hurt. But you also continue to struggle with these feelings. So a helpful question to ask is, do these things I do help? Do they give me the relationships I'm looking for? Is the problem any better or worse since you started coping with it this way? Could it be making things worse? Do you feel closer to the people in your life or further away from them? Now, all of us do things to push away, fix, or get rid of emotional distress. It's the way we're designed. Evolution has made us flawed. So if you get caught up blaming yourself for the way you think and feel, just take a break from that. It's not your fault. Nature has made you, me, and everyone else this way. Okay. So I'm saying observe the workability. Observe how well what you do works. Is it helpful? And recognizing something about that your design is flawed there, that doesn't help to judge yourself too harshly, but rather probably to show some compassion and understanding for the design that you have. So number five, I'm going to suggest, is to engage in more meaningful ways. For example, if you had been cared for emotionally in the past, how would you choose to be with other people? Part of growing older is about developing an identity. You learn about who you are, what you like, and what you're good at, and what you're not so good at. Me, I'm terrible at remembering certain things like recipes. Recipes I've cooked even, or conversations I've had. I tend to be better at learning new things and looking out for people. So As you can see, I've developed a story or a narrative of who I am. This can be helpful. It helps me to capitalise on what I'm good at and get help for the things I'm not so good at. But developing a story of who I am can also be extremely limiting because I start to believe that story. I can let it define who I am. And that story is nothing more than my history, which is what I've experienced and what I've done. And if you grew up without much nurturance, without much empathy or protection, then what stories do you think would develop about who you are? You might feel unimportant, unlovable, unworthy. And if you act as if those ideas are true, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You learn to cope with the pain by avoiding emotions, which doesn't let you change things. And instead of making heartfelt choices, you end up getting led down the garden path by your thoughts. And remember, your thoughts are just a representation of your history. It's a lot like what happens to your body because of what you do. You know, if you eat a lot of sugar and don't exercise, you get fat and probably more likely to get heart disease. But if you do the opposite, then your body's leaner, it's healthier, it's stronger, and it's more flexible. So what I'm saying here is that you have the power to change your experiences by choosing what you do. This can be really tricky, of course, because your mind's there, trying to help you make decisions and getting in the way with the stories of who you are. So the skill is to get clear about what you want from a relationship. And by this I mean, how do you want to behave in a relationship? Not what you want from other people. You might have an idea of that, but what other people do isn't within your direct control. Only what you do is. So it makes more sense to focus on that. Do you want to be caring, compassionate, attentive, assertive, adventurous? What are the ways that you can be? I'll give you an example. One of my relationship values is gratitude. I try to do a bit of it every day. And I only discovered this by exploring what I wanted and testing it out. It didn't just come to me from thinking about it so much. I got curious and started to try to do a bit of it every day. And when I express gratitude, however big or small, what I've discovered is that it makes my life richer, purposeful, and more rewarding. So to help you get clear about who you want to be, ask yourself this question. If you had experienced all the warmth, care, and guidance you'd wanted, how would you choose to be with other people? What would you find it easier to do that seems so alien right now? So my message, my invitation here is, going forwards, to let your experience and what you value direct what you do. And in the words of Joanne Dahl, who's a psychotherapist that I admire, it's time to establish your own life compass. So that was number 5, trying to make choices, engaging life in more meaningful ways. And 6, the 6th solution that I'm, or the 6th way that I'm suggesting, is to acknowledge other people's limitations. By appreciating what they give and looking to others and meeting new people. Don't let your friendship circle become stagnant. I mean, who wants to swim in a stagnant pond? So let me explain a bit more what I mean here. A person I used to know had a saying that friends come into your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And that saying I found really helpful because it helps me reflect on my own relationships that have changed over time. It's helped me to see that people give what they can, and it's worked when I've been able to accept this. It's meant I could let go of disappointments and focus on new relationships. And it's been really good for me. I've not cut people out so much or cut people off. I'll be straight with them. I'll say I need this or I need that, or I'll make efforts to keep in touch. But if I'm the one doing all the work, then I'll stop, because I found it just wasn't worth it. And I also think it's important to meet new people, to make new acquaintances, to get to know people as well as have people in your life that have been there for some time. It keeps the water fresh. So I'm talking about water here because I like swimming outdoors. But not just anywhere. I'm not going to swim in a stagnant pond that doesn't have any fresh water running into it. It's going to smell. And it might make me ill if I swallow some of it. It's not going to invigorate me to swim in a stagnant pond. But equally, I tend not to swim in the ocean or go too far out to sea. Quite frankly, it scares the sweet bejesus out of me. There's nothing to hang on to, little that keeps me steady. And I know not being a strong swimmer, again, some of my story about who I am, I could get into trouble, and then who knows what could happen. So instead, I prefer a fresh lake, a running river, or a tidal pool. It's fresh enough, but it also has those familiar features like the banks or the edges to hang on to if I need to. And relationships, friendships are like this for me, steady, familiar, and with a continuous source of freshness. I like to have people I've known for some time, people I've got to love and care about deeply, and I like to have new people where I can get new experiences of something different, exciting, and expansive. I found that there's a lot of life in making new friendships. Okay, so I've given you 6 ways there that I think will make a difference to developing and improving these two-way loving relationships. So I'll just summarise them briefly for you again. 1 was to become more aware of your emotional needs. And 2 is about asking for more support. 3 was... let's just remind myself, what was 3? 3 was, forming and investing in relationships with people who can care for you in a way that's nurturing, warm and protective. 4 is get clearer about what you do when you feel like other people don't care. And look at how well these things work. Do they tend to bring you closer to the people in your life or further away? 5 was engage in more meaningful ways. So try to make some choices, regardless of the story of that's arisen, that's developed about who you are, which is just a result of your history. Try to get clear about who you want to be. And 6 was acknowledge other people's limitations, appreciate what they can give, and look to others and new people to keep the water fresh. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this episode. My aim was to help you understand the area of emotional deprivation, where it comes from, what it looks like, how to break free from the traps of the past. And I've had some requests to keep going with this mini-series. People have got in touch to let me know about their life traps and to ask if I'll be featuring one in particular that they're struggling with. So I'm listening to that. And if you have any special requests of what you'd like in future episodes, please just let me know by filling in a contact form at www.openforwards.com. And if you like the show, please head on over to iTunes to leave a rating and a review. Just visit www.openforwards.com/iTunes. Help me get to that target of 20,000 downloads. downloads by the end of the year. And so look out for the next episode on the 5th of February, which is episode number 12 of the Open Forwards podcast, Self-Help SatNav. Bye for now.